we're all excited with the challenge. Ernst has had great success previously, both with younger teams and with senior teams. So we're looking forward to increasingly bringing on board the new methodology.
Welcome back, Union fans, to another Pitch Side podcast with me, Adam Kahn, your host. Producer AZ is here, making sure you can hear me loud and clear. And we are back for the first time since we had a special edition of the pod to start up the 2019 season, featuring new Union signing Marco Fabian. Marco Fabian, of course, Mexican international number 10, playmaker, creator, goal scorer. He is one of the biggest signings in Union history. And he arrived from Eintracht Frankfurt of the Bundesliga. If you missed that interview, please check it out. He was a wonderful and patient interviewee. He showed me his tattoos, talked about why he loves soccer, why he's excited to be in Philadelphia. And he is really excited to be here in Philly. Since I spoke to him, he has been courtside for a Sixers game, did a little jersey exchange with new Sixers player Tobias Harris, and has generally just been... seemed like he's very happy to be a part of the Philadelphia Union. And there's a good chance you'll get to see him in action in the Union's upcoming preseason matches. They're going to face Montreal and then DC. You're going to see live stream of one of those games on PhiladelphiaUnion.com. So check that out. Follow and check back at Union.com to make sure that you know when that is. And also, if you're tuning in today, make sure that you rate and follow this podcast, rate, review us, let me know what you like, what you don't like. You can find me on Twitter at Adam T. Kahn. You can find the Union, of course, at Philly Union on Instagram, at Philly Union, Philadelphia Union Facebook page. Check the Union out on all those sites. But for now, we're going to move on a little bit from Marco Fabian. And we're going to look at the Union youth setup, which is one of the best in the country. And it's run by Tommy Wilson, formerly of Rangers, was a player there, was part of their youth setup for a while as well. And he's been in charge of the Union's academy for about 5 years now. And he is going to be part of the crew that heads down to Atlanta this weekend to finish out the qualifying stage of the 2018-2019 Generation Adidas Cup. It's the U-17s and the U-15s. Both play this year, and they already played some matches at Talon Energy Stadium earlier back in October. And so the Union have two more matches. Both teams, both U-15s and U-17s, are going to face DC United and then Atlanta United, DC on February 15th, and then Atlanta United on February 18th. And if they finish top their group, which both have a good chance to do, they will move on to an even further stage of the GA Cup. In Dallas, they could face some of the best international teams in the world. They'll be coming in to play and face some of the best MLS competition they can find. That'll be a really fun event if the Union youth players get to do it. You've probably heard a lot of these youth player names before. Some of them are already down practicing, training with Bethlehem Steel. You see Patrick Bohui. You'll see Brandon Craig, who recently got a call up to the boys national team. Those guys are all going down. And so this is a chance for them to really showcase their talent against some of the best in the country, and then hopefully in the future, the best in the world. So just a quick update where the Union are right now, the U-17s, they have 5 points through 4 games. They're right in the middle of the pack. New York Red Bulls leads the U-17 group with 9 points. So still a chance Union could catch them. Again, that'll be DC United on the 15th and then Atlanta United on the 18th. And for the U-15s, they are atop their group right now. So they are sitting pretty, but they still have to finish things off. They have not lost yet. They have 9 points through 4 games. They'll be facing DC and then Atlanta. And if they can stay on top, they will get a great chance to go to Dallas and face some international competition. So that's coming up this weekend. And that's sort of the impetus for me talking to Tommy Wilson. But we went all over the place. We didn't stick with the GA Cup. There's a lot going on at the academy. And I asked Tommy sort of why the academy has developed the way it has, why the Union put so many resources into it. It's a question that Union owner Jay Sugarman always gets. It's a question that keeps coming up now that Ernst Tanner is the sporting director of the Union and has said that You know, he's here to make sure that the investments in the Union Academy are well done and result in first team players. So you'll see a lot of Academy and Academy graduates on Bethlehem Steel this year. You're going to see even more homegrowns on the Union's first team roster. Of course, Brendan Aronson is going to be there. Goalie Matt Fries is going to be there. He'll play for Steel as well, too. Both of them will. Anthony Fontana, Derek Jones. You'll see a lot of these guys. Of course, Austin Trusty and Mark McKenzie, who were the first Union Academy members to make it to the U.S. Men's National Team pool when they were invited up in January. So we talked about sort of the value of the Academy system and where Tommy thinks it's going to go now that Ernst Tanner is in town. And we talked about everything that's coming up for the Academy season aside from the GA Cup. So tune in, stick around for that. It's a really fun interview. Tommy is a fun guy to listen to if you haven't talked to him before. And if you haven't, if you ever see him around the Academy, you should definitely go talk to him. I'm sure he'd welcome that. All right, so without further ado, Tommy Wilson, Union Academy Director. Remember, rate and review this podcast and follow me at Adam T. Can. And we will keep the Pitch Side Pod going this season. Here's Tommy. So welcome to the Union Pitch Side Podcast, alongside Union Academy Director Tommy Wilson. I'm Adam Can. Tommy, thank you for coming on today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure.
So there are a few things I wanted to talk to you about. There's been a lot happening at the Academy. You've had a few new players come in. You've got John Shear doing some work, but you've also had some successes. And then recently the U13s got the news to be part of the CONCACAF Championship. Could you explain to me what that is and how you found out that you'd be a part of it and why you were chosen to be a part of it?
Yeah, it was news to me, I must say, and it's a really prestigious event. I've looked into it a little bit. Under 13 teams from the CONCACAF region are selected to represent their country. So, you know, like our under 13s have been selected to represent the USA in the event in Costa Rica in August. So we are, you know, it is an honour for us. We are delighted to have to be afforded that opportunity. I think we were picked on, there's various criteria. The first thing is the performance of the team. That under 13 team over the course of the first part of the year has performed well. The results are not that important, but they have been good, and they performed well in the winter showcase in North Carolina. So, but I think also it's a recognition of the work that we're doing across the board, that we're, you know, we're recognised as one of the most progressive academies. Our environment's good. Our game model is something that teams have admired, and it's really a recognition of the work that goes on across the club. So, you know, we're really look forward to the event. We don't know a great deal about it yet. We haven't received further information. I was approached by Jared Miklos from US Soccer at the recent showcase in Florida, and he advised me, asked me if we would consider doing it, and yeah, we're delighted to do so. We don't know all the details yet. We don't really know the age qualification and how many players we can take, et cetera, et cetera. Who our opponents are, and, you know, I think it's been going for a few years. So we look forward to it.
So it is a case where you were sort of selected because of the success and the way the academy has been built here. US Soccer wanted you to be a representative of them there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not... You know, like under 13 age group, you know, there's not a league table. However, the US Soccer get the results of the games, and then they group you against, when we go to events, they group us against comparable teams. So we always play other MLS academies, some of the bigger teams across the country, the East Coast in particular. So, yeah, it's we could have the best environment ever. And if our team, for whatever reason, was really poor, I don't think we'd get selected.
Right. You
know? So I'd like to say, you know, to point out Phil Carn as a coach of that team, he deserves a lot of credit for his work. not only with his team, but across the board with the young ones coming up through the academy.
So can I ask you, one of the things I'm curious about at that age group is what sorts of, what level of instruction can you give them? What types of principles are you instilling in them at that age when they're still that young and you don't want the focus to be on results? You want it to be on development.
Yeah.
How do you advise the players at that age?
I think that we have a sort of curriculum that's age appropriate. So those boys have made the step from the U12s, which is a nine-a-side game. So we have to ensure that they understand the 11-a-side game, understand our principles of play. And, you know, the game's the same for a 13-year-old as it is for a night. It's the same game. You know, you attack one goal, you defend the other, and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah. But there are certain aspects of it that the younger ones, because of their physical and mental capabilities or capacity, they're not able to take it all in. You know, if you think a long switch is a play, the young boys can't accomplish that.
Right.
Repeated sprints up and down the field, that's something that they're not able to do. They move up and down the field a little bit like as a swarm, because it's a lot of short passing. So they attack together and they defend together, which is going to be part of our methodology going forward under Ernst's guidance. So it's good that this young team is able to cope with that even right now.
So is that... I guess you've been doing this a while. How do you incorporate principles of play when you do know that the game is going to be played slightly differently than it would be at the older ages?
I think there has to be a realism of what stage the player is at and what he's capable of taking in. And if we have a curriculum where, you know, there's aspects of play that you want to maintain. There's aspects you want to focus on, and there's aspects you want to introduce. So that's how we work. So we introduce new concepts, we maintain existing concepts, or we focus on the specific one based on their age group.
Okay. And how have you and Phil worked together to sort of develop that over time? Did any of the current homegrowns on the Union come through the U13s, or were they just Union juniors? I think it might have been just Union juniors for some of them, and then
we had a U14 was the first team that Mackenzie played in, and Austin and Fontana. There wasn't a 13s at that point. Brendan Aronson was a young. He was a U13 in the U14s, but many of our future ones will have come through the under 13 age group. And at this point, they make the jump from the 9-a-side game to the 11-a-side game onto the big field.
Yeah.
It's massive for them at the start. They don't really have much of a clue what they're doing. But with guidance and thoughtful coaching, they get there.
That's incredible. I guess that sort of reminds me how young this academy is. That, you know, the club is pretty young. This is the 10th season. But the academy, the guys who are coming here now, there wasn't a 13s team at the time, and now there's even a pre-academy before that that you guys have introduced recently.
Yeah, I think that, we have done. And it was always my intention to broaden the base. And we've broadened it even further with the introduction of the sort of a soccer in the community project with Dave Pettigan. So, you know, I think that if you're building anything, you need a strong and robust base. The pre-academy has allowed us to do that. I would say that, you know, I've been here for 5 years now, and we inherited a lot of players, a lot of good work with Union Juniors in the early days. But, you know, I always felt that anything that we got in the first couple of years would be a bonus because we really didn't have a chance to make a mark. So, you know, we found Eric Jones playing in a men's league team. We played for the name escapes me just now. It'll come back to me. we played a friendly against we had some of our under 18s and under 17s who hadn't had many games, and Jonesy played, you know, against us. It was a really good game. And I remember he stuck out like a sore thumb, and I thought, I wonder what age that boy is, you know? And he was only 16, and maybe 15, and we brought him in. And so, you know, that type of thing can happen, and happens regularly, that where if you have got enough people out there looking for players, you tend to find them. But sometimes you're lucky, and Jonesy was... Initially, was lucky. We did a lot of work with him,
yeah,
to make him better.
Well, it's incredible now, because there have been games. I clearly remember the Bethlehem Steel against FC Cincinnati, who's joining MLS now, where Jonesy stuck out like a sore thumb in a good way again, where he was just too powerful for what they had in midfield.
Yeah, no, he's a. I'm hoping that, you know, he's. I think Derek's in a good place. He's and I know that the coaching staff like him. And I thought he came in last year and had some excellent performances. So I think he just needs a run of games now.
Right. So let's, I guess, moving from the U13s up to some of the older age groups. You recently had the Winter Showcase. And can you tell me sort of about that? You were telling me that it's the same sort of thing you were describing, where you're matched up against other other MLS clubs. And then it's really sort of a test for... how has the first half of the season gone? What principles are you going to work on in the second half? Just getting a gauge of where you're at, but then also the games count towards your standings.
Yeah, which is a bit it's a little bit strange that you play in a league and you have position 1 to position 14 or whatever many teams are in the league.
Yeah.
And then you play 3 league games against teams of equivalent ranking to you. So, like, our under-17s going into the event were ranked number 2 in the country. So, we played against 2 league games against number 1 and number 3 in the country, which was a real challenge and great challenge, great experience. You know, the 17s played Vardar, were excellent. Played Toronto, great game, 1-3-2. And played Dallas, another great game, which was, I don't think it was a referee's finest moment. And, you know, I think FC Dallas would agree with that. He gave them 2 penalties, which were never...
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to criticise the referees, because we all have bad days. But, so, that was, you know, you walk away from that feeling really pleased. But I was almost more pleased with how the 19s did. You know, they had tough games in each of the 3 games they played. In the first 2 games, they were the better team for an hour against Real Salt Lake and Real Colorado. And then we played last year's champions at under-17, Seattle. And although we lost 1-0, I thought that over the piece we were better than them on that day. So, you know, it's... I think as a young player growing up, you need to learn to win, you need to learn to lose, you need to learn how to come back from a disappointment. And these events provide that opportunity.
But I talked to Brendan Aaronson just a couple of days ago after he got back from the showcase, and I was struck by, he played in, I think he started 2 of the games, I was struck by just how confident he was that most of the time he had been on the better side. He really felt that even though... His team gave up some late goals, he felt that they were the better squad, and so his confidence hadn't been diminished by any of the results. It was the way the team played that he really reflected on as what he got out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's the opportunity that an academy provides you. We need to be. That's why, you know, people talk about results are not important. I would hope that the coaches and the staff, when they lose a game, are disappointed. They don't want to. We don't want to be patting ourselves in the back too often, saying, "Well done, lads, another good loss." You know, and we don't. To be fair, I mean, if you look at the results over the course of the season, some of our teams are unbeaten.
Yeah. The 19s had a long unbeaten run last year too.
Yeah, they did, and the 17s had only lost 1 game, and the 15s and 15s were unbeaten, and so it's more how you react to these things, because Brendan shortly will be around the first team and they'll lose a game or two, and you have to have the resolve to overcome that. You have to understand what it's like to come back from a goal down and win, or to be a goal up and lose, so that it doesn't become, it's not all about the results. So Kevin, I thought Kevin Coleman, the 19s coach, and Gary, Gary Lewis, the 17s coach, together with the staff that we had there, did a great job at the showcase. And I'm sure that Kevin would reflect on it and think that, you know, the results were not necessarily what he'd hoped for. But the way he organised the team, the way he dealt with the disappointment, the way he... We were able to come out of it all feeling really positive. And I think that... I think you should always reward, almost like reward, your intentions rather than the outcome. Reward the effort rather than the outcome. Because you can control that, the effort, but you can control your intentions. You get a bad referee, you get a poor decision, something happens, you can't always control the outcome.
So I was struck looking at the box scores from the 19s games, how much talent there is in and around that team, that Kevin had to do a lot of rotating just to give everyone who deserved minutes at the showcase. And so that, I feel like that's also a hard thing to do when you don't have the continuity in the lineup, to keep the performances and to keep, I guess, the style of play what you want it to be when you're changing in and out who's up top, who's in midfield, and even who's in the back line.
Yeah, and even who's in the goal. We had three goalkeepers there, which we've never done.
Is that just because they all deserved it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, normally you have a goalie, a first choice and a second choice. We've got three sort of equal goalkeepers, so we didn't know what to do. We decided we'll take three of them, give them a game each. So we did that. That can happen. It's the first time it's happened with us. Yeah, and we took 21 players in each team.
Wow, okay.
We did it for... I mean, some boys went for development reasons, but every single player took to the field. Not all the teams do that. Some stick with their 11 and just play like 12 or 13 players. We don't really believe in that. So I think that the boys put in a lot of effort here and deserve the opportunity to participate.
So the other thing I want to ask you about involving the Winter Showcase is, I know that with Ernst on board, you're incorporating some of his philosophy, his methodology.
Yeah.
And so this is, I know you want to take it slowly so that you don't, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. So how have you been doing that? And what type of sort of feedback do you get from Winter Showcase when you're slowly bringing in these new ideas, and then you get to see your teams against these other clubs who aren't going through transition? They're just going with the same philosophy without changing.
Yeah. That's a good question. Ernst has not been, you know, he's not demanded that we introduce the principles overnight. He knows, I mean, he's been working in development as long as I have. So he understands.
I'm not going to ask you how long that is.
too long. Longer than I care to remember. I'm still trying to remember the name of Jones's team, and I know them really well. It'll come back to me.
Was it Lone Star?
Lone Star.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're good friends with their ownership and their staff, and they're real big supporters of ours. Junior Lone Star. So Ernst, when I've known Ernst for a number of years, we talked about how we would introduce it. We were well into our season, you know. We had a way of playing which was common across the club under Ernie. So we've really maintained that until we had some meetings recently. I meet with the coaches every week anyway. And we talked about beginning to introduce the new principles within the existing game model. So that's not a radical change for the players then. You just close the team in a bit and join the lines of the team become a little bit more closed, so that the players can move together more compactly up and down the field. So we haven't changed our system of play. We've adapted our style of play. Now we will have more thorough changes at the start of the second part of the year, and then next season, you'll see our teams will look different. If you're looking at our teams just now, to the untrained eye, you won't see really anything different. If somebody was to point out to you what we've done, then you would start to see it. It would start to manifest itself quite clearly. So I think the good thing is, for me, that we have a series of principles that we'll operate with, regardless of the formation. Because when the game starts, the formation is just like a number.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really mean anything. You know, like you could play, we played a 4-2-3-1. You could play a 4-2-3-1 and sit in your own half the whole time.
I've seen that happen.
Yeah. Or you could play a 4-2-3-1 in really high press. And then there's your shape can change in transition. So we've got some work to do, but it's something that we welcome. We're all excited with the challenge. Ernst has had great success previously, both with younger teams and with senior teams. So we're looking forward to not introducing because we've done that, but increasingly bringing on board the new methodology.
So one more question on this. When you're incorporating these ideas and you're sort of adding them to the game model you already have, and you have some of these players who have been in the same system since they were, U13s. One thing I always think about when I meet boys in your academy is that they have sort of quiet confidence almost. And I wonder if that comes from knowing that each stage of the way, they already have some idea of how they're supposed to play on the field.
Yeah.
Is this exciting for them? Is this something that could make them anxious at all? Do you see them being sort of excited for the opportunity to come up with these, incorporate these new ideas into how they play?
I think there's a few things there. I think they're excited by the opportunity that they have here. They see players ahead of them signing contracts and they think, whoa, there's not a glass ceiling here.
Yeah.
That could be me next. I mean, we one of the staff, I can't remember who it was, it's either Kevin Gary or Chris Brewer, when they were doing a presentation, he put a picture of Austin and Mark McKenzie up. And the quote or the question underneath it was, who's next? Because it's so tangible,
Yeah.
I said to the boys recently, we were at the GA Cup in Dallas, and McKenzie and Trusty were in the same hotel as, who was it? Was it Drogba? It's one of the top guys, I think it was Drogba. And a lot of our young boys were almost in awe of him. It was like Madonna was in the hotel, And I said, guys, in a couple of years, you could be playing against them. And lo and behold, they were.
Yeah.
They're both playing against Ibrahimovic. So it's so close. They can touch it. They can almost touch it, feel it. So I think that brings confidence to them. I think the way they're taught in the school, where they're given a lot of responsibility for their own learning. And I've always felt that young American boys are more confident in that way than boys from the UK, for example, who would be uncomfortable presenting to their peers about how they're playing, about their IDP. It's not in the British psyche. So I think they have a head start in that way.
So when I talk to Aronson, I think it was Fontana was there and Matt Real were there too. Mm-hmm. And it was impressive how it didn't seem like Aronson was the new kid in the team, you know, in the first team, because they already had known him for so long. Yeah. There was already that camaraderie and they all treated him like he belonged there. And I know I've seen Fafa Picot interact with him too, even though he didn't come through the academy. It's the same way. When these guys arrive, it seems like they're treated like they already belong. And that it's pretty impressive.
I think that having been around first teams for a long time and top young players coming into an environment, you know, I read something recently that Rio Ferdinand spoke about Pogba. When he came into Manchester United's first team environment, the first team players know what a good player looks like. They've also been through it themselves.
Right.
So they recognise a young boy who's just there to make up the numbers, but they also recognise a talent. And you can tell by their comfort level when they pass the ball to him. So when I was watching Brendan training with the first team, him and Harris were interacting all the time because both of them knew that if they passed the ball, they would get it back or the possession would be retained. I think that sort of intangible thing is important. I also think that you need some class acts around your first team players. You know, you know, there's been other environments I've been in where the first team players have been so protective of their own status that they kind of bully the young boys.
Sure, yeah.
And that's not conducive to development at all. So, yeah, I think that Anthony and Matthew and Brendan and Mark and Austin, I'm not sure if they all played in the same team ever. They may have done. But they certainly trained together. They grew up together. They were schooled together. They travelled together. I don't know if they ever went out celebrating together. They might have done. They don't tell me that. But they've almost followed the same path.
So last question. I believe you were recently nominated for Academy of the Year.
Yes.
Tell me, where does that nomination come from? And what's the process? How do you earn that honor?
Hey, I think this is a new thing. It's MLS Academy of the Year.
Okay.
So the MLS Chief Soccer Officers, I don't know if they introduced the idea or, but certainly those were the ones who were asked to nominate three teams. And our club is one of them, which I'm, you know, it's how do you measure that? Is it notional? Is it anecdotal?
Right.
Who knows? But it's nice that our name is, I think any time you read stuff online, you know, the things that you see, it might be like Atlanta stadium experience and Red Bull system. And we seem to be synonymous with development, which again, in a short period of time, is something we should all be proud of, because we do work hard at it, Richie and the ownership. Jay, they really support us and invest in us. The school separates us to some extent. I think those people that had the vision to introduce this project deserve the credit for that.
Tommy, thank you so much for talking with me today. Hopefully I'll get to talk to you again soon in the second half of the season once it starts back up.
Yep. Thanks, Adam. Anytime.
All right, that was Tommy Wilson, Union Academy Director. A really fun interview. That was a great time. And we're going to move on from that to talk about the rest of the Union preseason schedule. But if you have any questions, follow-up questions for Tommy, you can always hit me up on Twitter at Adam T. Can. Let me know what you want to hear, and I will do my best to get you answers from Tommy or anyone else in the Union organization. We have a lot of great interviews already in the bag for this year, but if there is anyone that you want to hear from, anyone on the technical staff, anyone behind the scenes, anything you want to know about how the Union operate, both on the technical soccer side or on the business side, let me know and I will get them on this podcast. I will run them down. They're never too far away from me here at the Union campus. And you know the Union campus if you're here for the recent Union kit launch that took place in the lobby of the Wharf building where the Union business offices are. And of course the first team trains and practices right around there at the power training complex and at the annex, which is right across the street. So if you came to that, I hope you had a good time. If you saw me there, you probably didn't say hi because not many people did, but I was there. I was wandering around. I was incognito. I don't think I had my Union polo on. But if you know me, you recognize me. I saw a couple friendly faces. Hey, Greg. All right. What's coming up for the Union in the rest of the preseason? Well, after a scrimmage against Orlando that the Union scored 4 goals in, you saw Corey Burke, Sergio Santos got his first of the preseason, CJ Sapong got on the board there, and even Bethlehem Steel player Michi Ngalina got the final goal of that match. The Union now face two more MLS teams before they end the preseason against Ottawa Fury, a USL side, USL championship side. Next up is this Saturday, February 16th, 4 p.m. against Montreal Impact. And then on February 20th against DC United, that'll be a 7 p.m. game. And that will be live streamed on PhiladelphiaUnion.com. So make sure you tune in for that. The Impact game will not be live streamed, but we will be doing a live blog on the website. If you've been following those, we will post highlights as they come in on our social media channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Watch out for that. But then we will also live blog the entire game on PhiladelphiaUnion.com. If you followed along with that before, you know we post a lot of updates. I'm not quite sure how we do it so fast, but they get out there. And then after the DC United game, February 23rd at 2 p.m., Ottawa Fury, and that will close out the preseason for the Union. They'll head back to Philadelphia around February 23rd, 24th, and then they'll be in town until the opener on March 2nd against Toronto FC. Toronto FC, of course, a team that has recently lost Giovinco, but still has Jozy Altidore and Michael Bradley. They also lost Victor Vasquez. They are a team that's a bit unpredictable right now. So we will, of course, have another podcast before that match where we'll break it down and discuss what this Toronto team is going to look like when they come to Talon Energy Stadium on March 2nd. So make sure you subscribe, rate, and follow us. Give us a review and let me know what you want to know about Toronto FC and the Union before that opening match. And we will try to get head coach Jim Curtin or someone on the podcast to talk to you about what the Union are planning for that game. So that's it for the Union Pitch Side Pod. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to me talk with Tommy Wilson. Again, anyone else you want to hear, at Adam T. Can on Twitter, at Adam T. Can. The T stands for, I'm not going to tell you. You can figure it out. Someone is. Sometimes my mom comments. Maybe she'll let you know. All right, we will see you next time on the Pitch Side Pod. Again, check out our last interview with new Union creator Marco Fabian. Check out this one with Tommy Wilson and tune in for more coming up. Thanks a lot, Union fans. For producer AZ, I'm Adam Can. See you soon.